Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and this is the season finale and we shall go out with a big red bang.
Yes, I'm very, very, very excited.
Why are you so excited, Mum?
Well, there have been two people on my list, my target list to have on our podcast. Yeah. One is Marcus Rashford, obviously.
Which is still waiting for.
And this special person.
Christmas has come early for you, Mum.
Come very early.
We've got July. You're cooking for Keir Starmer, Sir Keir Starmer tonight.
Sir Keir Starmer.
The leader of the opposition.
Yeah.
Potentially our next Prime Minister.
Yeah.
What are you cooking?
Well, he doesn't eat meat.
How do you feel about that, Mum?
Not happy, because I would have done...
Will it change your vote?
No.
Okay.
I would have done a little steak on the barbecue for him, but he's also coming a bit early, so it's kind of a bit high tea-ish.
How do you feel about that?
Well, it's high tea for me. It's kind of late dinner for you, because it's 5 o'clock, darling.
You just got my vote, because he likes eating dinner at five, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
So we're going for... It's been a breezy few days, but the sun is shining, and you've kind of gone for a bit of an al fresco, Provençal kind of Frenchy
high tea
situation.
Yeah. So I've made a tomato tart a la Alison Robben.
Yeah.
I've made my pui lentil salad that you love.
So good.
I've made courgette salad with mint. Well, in fact, you helped do that.
Yeah, easy. Shaved courgette, pecorino, mint, olive oil and lemon.
Yeah, and then I've made also an aubergine and tomato and cucumber salad. So I've roasted the aubergine. With olive oil. It's got lemon juice, olive oil. So it's a bit like guacamole, but no avocado.
It's guacamole. I think nobody calls it guacamole.
Oh, guacamole.
Which is actually interesting because the only request that we had that we did not do anything with was avocado.
Yeah. He clearly got the memo about Meghan being blamed for avocado shortages all over the world.
Didn't want right-wing media
going on the avocado
subject.
Front. Yeah.
Do you want to know what I've been up to today?
Yes.
I did sports
day. Had a massage? No?
That is very cruel. That is very, very cruel.
Okay.
I did sports day for 2 hours.
I heard you, darling. You sent me little video clips of you yelling at your daughter to go faster. That could hear.
That was words of encouragement, and I learned from the best, Mum.
No helicopter parenting there.
I believe that sports day should be taken seriously, not the taking part that counts, all that crap.
It's the winning.
Yeah.
So she was the Alcaraz of...
She was not the Alcaraz. Okay. However, she gave it a go and she was adamant that I did the parent race. Bear in mind, about a litre of water in because we'd been there for 1 hour and I did the run.
Yeah.
And I wet myself.
Oh, my God, Jessie, we don't need to hear
because
this.
Three children in and a litre of water and not going for a wee. Yeah, I wet myself and I did not win.
Did anybody see
dramatically
that you'd wet yourself?
No, but I told
the
everybody.
Teacher didn't have to take you aside and say, find a new clean pair of knickers in the cupboard.
Me on the ski slopes, yeah. No.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's what I was doing. I'm very interested to know whether Sir Keir Starmer has partaken in the parents' race and whether he's competitive. I have very important questions. Also, I went clubbing at the weekend and I wonder last time that Sir Keir stepped inside a club. These are the vital questions I shall
be
asking.
Everyone wants to know.
We shall be asking food questions, family questions.
Because that's what this is all about.
Exactly.
We're not Laura Kunzberg and Robert Peston here.
Mum, take it away.
What, darling?
Say who we've got.
Sir Keir Starmer.
Coming up
on Table Manners.
Sir Keir Starmer, you're in Clapham, you're about to get fed by Lenny Ware, and we've got so many questions to ask, mostly food related.
Very good.
Thank you for being here.
No, not at all. Thanks for having me.
You know, we've had some other MPs on.
Yeah, and, some of your front bench.
Who have you had on?
Jess Phillips.
Oh, yeah, I did know.
And
that.
Ed Miliband.
Ed came on.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Ed and can I just tell you, very flirty.
Was he?
Yeah. Surprisingly, asked me if I'd like to go naked swimming at Hampstead Ponds.
Oh, he's obsessed with wild swimming. I didn't realise it was that wild.
Well, I think, yeah.
Well, he's always tried
to sell it to me as just sort of good for the
soul.
Oh,
he asked you to go naked with him too. Well, Mum, you don't feel so special.
He's become so into wild swimming.
Oh, no.
But, wait till I have a word with him.
Yeah.
And you had Sadiq?
We've had Sadiq.
He gave us a scoop, so I'm waiting for your scoop for us, please. Thank you. He said that he was announcing that he was running for mayor again. So I'm just, we'll wait. We'll give you a few glasses here and we'll see what you got.
Okay. Oh, that's really nice.
But Keir, we kind of, let's start at the beginning. Dinner, when around the dinner table. Who was around the dinner table?
Are you a Londoner?
Yes, Kentish Town.
Oh, right. Proper Londoner.
So who was cooking your meals when you were a child and who was eating them or not eating them?
So when I was growing up, I lived out in Surrey on the Surrey-Kent border in a semi-detached, pebble-dashed house with my mum and dad and four kids, three bedrooms. So I shared with my brother and my sister shared with each other. So I had the bunk bedroom with my brother.
Did you like that?
It was very cramped.
Are you the eldest? You
so there? I've got an older sister.
Right.
I'm then next. And then I've got a brother and sister who are 18 months younger, who are twins.
Oh, wow.
And so that's where we lived. And cooking-wise, this was what I would call a sort of classic working class family. So my dad worked in a factory. He was a toolmaker. My mum was a nurse. But she, I don't know whether you know this, she had Still's disease when she was 11, which is basically a very aggressive juvenile arthritis, and it can destroy your sort of system. And luckily for her, they found something that could treat her, at least mitigating. And so, because the prognosis at 11 was that she wouldn't walk after the age of 20 and she wouldn't be able to have kids. So even the fact that I'm here is a sort of miracle down to Guy's Hospital and what they're able to do with her. But that meant that in the end, it was just my dad working. And so it was a very traditional setup. Mum did all the cooking. All the cooking.
Good cook?
Yeah, really good. But my dad, I was thinking about this when I was coming down. I can't remember my dad ever cooking anything. It was just such a traditional working class setup. He just didn't cook anything. My mum did everything.
And what was a memorable dish that your mum made?
Well, when I was growing up, it was British food.
Yeah.
British food, always.
Really?
So my dad was really sort of rigid frameworked about this. So he wasn't going to be eating pasta or anything like that.
You're kidding.
So it was British food. There came a point, must have been when I was a teenager, I think, when my mum sort of branched out and tried
and
a chicken curry.
Okay. Oh,
it was one of these sort of chicken and a bit of curry sauce and some sultanas and a bit of rice. And this this was really exotic for us because otherwise it was, as you'd expect, sort of sausages, mash, meat, veg. It was that chicken and, you know, potatoes or vegetables. It was always that sort of
menu. And you don't eat meat now.
I don't eat meat now. But then it was classic potato, two veg or something like that.
So how did the curry go down in the household?
I thought it was great.
Did your dad like it?
Eventually, yeah. But he wouldn't be adventurous on anything else. So, you know, we didn't try anything else at all when I was growing up.
So with your mum's illness, did that make it quite hard for, I mean, having four kids in the house? Were there times when it was quite debilitating for her that it was obvious for you and you were aware of it?
Yeah, it was all of the time, really. She was in incredible pain and struggling all the time. What's interesting looking back at it, I don't think I noticed as much then, because she contracted this illness before I was born, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So she was always the same.
I never knew, this was always how Mum was.
Yeah.
Right.
And there was always, at mealtimes, along with the food, there would always be a sort of Mum's tablets that she'd have at every meal, because she had to have painkillers and strong tablets and then other tablets to take away the side effects of the first set of tablets and that sort of thing. So that was part of the routine, if you like, at the table, which was the food and then, all of the tablets and medicines that had to go alongside it.
And were you all talking about politics at dinner time?
No, not particularly.
Were your parents political?
Not actively. So my dad was a Labour supporter. It was a Labour household.
Yeah.
And, very strongly believed in the Labour Party and the Labour movement. And in terms of activity, so I remember distinctly, he would go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, come home at 5 o'clock for his tea, then he'd go back to work at 6 till 10 o'clock at night.
You're kidding. Every
5 days a week.
Why?
This was his routine. Because we didn't have a lot of money. He had,
and
to,
had
get
to get
the work
the job done.
And so he would come in, eat and go. And therefore there was no space in his life for, activities,
so
political activities.
Did he play with you? So he was too busy to even get involved.
Yeah, I can't remember him being particularly involved with us. It was always Mum. Particularly when we were younger. So if we sort of came home from school, particularly primary school, it'd be Mum that was there to greet us when we came in at whatever time from primary school, 3:30, 4:30. And at that stage, I've got this distinct memory of sort of jam sandwiches at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And my mum always, in my head at least, always playing Jim Reeves. She loved Jim Reeves.
Who's Jim Reeves?
Oh, is it like a country?
An old country singer from years ago. Who's Jim Reeves? That's so great.
Sorry.
It just shows that where this is from.
Obviously, your mum was incredibly busy bringing up 4 children, and your dad was incredibly busy bringing home the bacon. And do you think if your mum had worked, what do you think she would have been interested in doing?
She would have carried on being a nurse. She loved.
So she
being
works
nurse.
Whilst being. So she was exhausted too.
She worked in her late teens when she first went to work.
Okay.
And then she stopped.
And then did she go back?
No. No, she wasn't strong enough to go back. Yeah. And also having 4 children just didn't allow her to go back. But she loved the NHS. She was so proud of being a nurse. It was like, goes through like a sort of a rock. It was incredible. So she'd definitely have carried on being a nurse if she could have done.
How old was she when she had her first child?
She was 21, I think, maybe just 22. So basically, once she'd been told... because of your illness, you may not have children.
She kept going.
Well, she said, I'm not having that. And obviously took these drugs, which were a sort of form of steroids, which helped mitigate the illness. And then she got on with it because she got married at 21 and had children straight away. Because I think she must... I've never discussed this with her. And obviously I can't now because she's passed away. But I assume it's because she felt... at any moment, I might not be ill. I might not be well enough to have children, so I'm not going to hang about.
Mm.
I'm going to get on with it. So she was determined, and had 4 children.
Was it a happy childhood?
Yeah. It was happy. It was. I did a lot of sports. I was playing football the whole time, out the house doing that sort of thing. But yeah, it was. There wasn't a lot of discussion. We didn't sort of discuss politics or current affairs around the kitchen table. It wasn't
so
that kind of household.
Where did that come?
Yeah, when did you get interested in politics?
I joined the Labour Party when I was 16, so there was something there, obviously, that got me into politics.
Was it a particular figure in the Labour Party?
No, it was just this burning sense that we needed to change things, and that if you're going to change things, it had to be the Labour Party. So it just made absolute sense to me to join the Labour Party as soon as I could.
Yeah.
It was just sort of hardwired in me. But it didn't come out of discussions around the kitchen table. I think it came out of... observing what, we didn't have a lot of money, so I knew, there were times when things were really tough and we couldn't afford to pay all the bills, so we'd have to choose, what wouldn't we pay, and the one we always chose was the telephone, because that was a landline. It was, I think, a monthly payment or whatever it was. And if you had your phone cut off, you didn't have to pay that bill. So it was quite tough in that sense. I mean, not pleading poverty or anything, but it was, you know, we knew what it was like not to have a lot of money. And this goes to sort of food as well, because my mum and dad almost never had anyone around, because my dad felt that people disrespected him because he worked in a factory. He felt this really strongly that people looked down on him. And when, you know, when people come around for dinner or whatever it is, and they, you don't know every, you know, you're meeting people for the first time, you inevitably have that discussion. Well, what do you do for a living? And he hated that discussion, because he felt that as soon as he said he worked in a factory, people sort of went quiet and didn't quite know what to say.
Did you feel like that when you were at school, if kids asked you what your dad did?
I didn't feel like that, but it's given me something I've held on to all my life, which is a real sense that respect and dignity are, for me, probably the two most valuable and important values in life. And that I think, was deep in me. And I think it's what drove me to say, I want to be in the Labour Party and to change things. And, you know, and that then took me on a different course to my dad, because my dad did his skills education, his technical skills at night school, whereas I got the chance to go off to university. So this was the sort of the opportunity that I was now getting that others hadn't had and my dad hadn't had.
To was be he the first... clever, your dad?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Did he read a lot?
He read a lot. He listened to music a lot. He listened to classical music. But there was no chance of him going to university when he was growing up. It was, you're going out to get a job and you need the technical skills to do it. So that's what he did.
And but he so wanted there was always it, this, yeah.
I don't know, this sense that he wasn't valued because of what he did. And that really burnt away at him. And in the end, stopped them having people around. And then we wouldn't go out to eat. I don't remember ever going to a restaurant as a child, ever. We did go, you know, if we're on holiday.
Did you have fish and chips?
We're on holiday, we'd have takeaway fish and chips on the birthday of any of us.
Okay.
And that would be takeaway, bring it home. And then when we're on holiday, we went to the Lake District every year, because my mum loved the Lake District. And so we always went there. And we would then occasionally eat at pubs, a sort of pub food in the evening. But beyond that, never, I mean, I honestly can't remember going to a restaurant with my mum and dad.
Do you still like fish and chips?
I do still like fish
vinegar
and chips.
Vinegar,
definitely. Okay. Yeah.
Very important.
But then, so I then got the chance to go, you know, on a journey that took me away from that sort of small town, working class base to Leeds University, which was an incredible journey. And one of the speeches I gave the other day was about smashing the class ceiling and breaking the link between where children and young people start in life and where they can get to. And too many children and young people are still, their future is determined by the earnings and income of their parents rather than their own ability.
It's true.
I mean, you know, this is a moral mission like none other. But for me, I was now starting a different journey, which was off to university, which was fantastic. And so, I mean, it was eye-opening, because you go from a small town to a city. I've never really been to a big city like this before.
Leeds is fun.
I'd got as far as Croydon in South London.
Poor thing.
But I hadn't got to you know, a city like Leeds. And so suddenly you're, you know, this is a big city, it's diverse, there's lots of things going on. And suddenly my horizon for food just expanded massively.
Where were the restaurants or the places that you were going out and eating?
Indian restaurants. I'd never been to an Indian restaurant. This was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, Chinese restaurants. You know, curried chips. You know, curried chips at Leeds. I remember the first time
curry
I ever tasted...
Curry sauce on your chips.
Curry sauce on your chip.
But that's quite a northern thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not southern.
But it was such a, you know, that sort of journey, opportunity, social mobility, call it what you like. But it was suddenly my world was opening up, and that included food, because of the fact that we'd always eaten pretty
traditional
British food.
Did you live
British
in a hall of reticence?
I did, yeah, to start with.
And did you, and then you shared a flat?
Then I shared a flat for the second year and third
cook?
Year.
So can you cook?
Yes, I love cooking.
Do you?
Yeah,
what was one of your university delights that you would offer up to your friends?
I don't think delights would be the word. We had six of us in the house, and we had a rota where each of us cooked one night in a week for everybody else. And we sort of
You had a rota? Was it all blokes? Or
No.
It feels
it
very
was
democratic.
Yeah. Three, yeah.
three blokes, three girls in the house.
It was all studying the same thing?
No, different things. So I had one of my very best friends who was studying law with me. And then there was one person I'd been at school with, then various others that we sort of connected with as we went on the journey. But, you know, as for the food was cheap as chips food, because the most important thing was that the ingredients had to be cheap, because you're a student, you didn't have much money. And it was, you know, chili con carne or coronation chicken. Right.
Oh, that sounds quite fat. Chili con carne,
yeah.
When did you give up meat then?
I gave up meat probably about 25 years ago. Okay. So after university, I gave up meat.
Why?
As a matter of principle.
Okay.
And that's why I struggle with it, because I love meat.
Oh, do you? Oh, God.
I love it.
God, you really are principled. So, I wouldn't be that principled.
But it's... and to start with, I gave up fish as well. But then I went back to fish because I found it too much to lose. But then I got together with Vic, my wife. She's been proper vegetarian in the sense she doesn't eat meat or fish, and she did that when she was 8 or 9 years old.
So no chicken soup on a Friday night.
No chicken soup. Mock chicken soup. It's very good.
Mock chicken soup. Tell me about it.
Try it one day. It's nice. It's good.
So how do you make it?
Well, she does it with just a sort of mixed
vegetables.
Thing. And, yeah, but and
matzo
then
balls?
We've got
Okay.
And then we've got two children. So our boy is 15. And our girl is 12.
Do you cook meat for them?
So our girl has never in her life tasted meat or fish, because
until she gets to university.
Well, this is the thing.
She's having that chili con carne.
So as soon as what we said to the kids was, by the time they're about 10, it's up to you.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have meat or fish in the house. We don't cook it until they're about 10. Obviously, they're just eating.
Oh,
with
I've
us.
Got veggie friends who've always cooked meat for their children.
Yeah. So we never did. And then at the age of 10, I said, you can do what you like. And our boy said, great. So he orders, the moment we go out, there's a Deliveroo for Kentucky Fried Chicken or McDonald's. So he's taken full sort of liberty with the license to do
what
he
likes. When you go out, he orders it?
No, he will order me.
In front of you?
We're not, you know, we're not bothered by that.
And you just smell it and think,
great.
Oh, wow.
This goes back. So if you give up meat or fish on a matter of principle, you still sort of hanker
That's
after
terrible.
It.
Terrible.
And so when he brings it in the house... It's like,
Do you do any of the kind of substitute, like we do this bacon or something like that, and you'll do the seitan or, you know, the
Linda McCartney.
Linda McCartney.
Yeah, we do all of that. The corn sausages,
yeah.
The Beyond Meat burgers, which are really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
I mean, quite a lot of the time if we're cooking, we don't bother with that, because if you're doing pasta or something like that, you don't need to. But
what's the veggie food like in the House of Commons?
Oh, the food in the House of Commons is pretty, you know, it's nothing special.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite...
Somebody needs to set up a really nice sort of restaurant,
Jessie,
or takeaway in the House of Commons.
Where...
Seriously.
Listen, Mum, you're about to go into retirement. Maybe you should do that.
Yes.
A really nice salad bar, a fresh salad bar or something.
But you don't even have a fresh salad bar?
No.
Oh, wow.
So this is good. You've got to come in. Okay, you've
I'll
got to come in as my guest to Parliament and have a look around and see what
Definitely.
You make of the food. And then, you know, to get in there and
Can
do
I
something.
Can I ask, when you're having dinner or lunch in the House of Parliament, do you only sit with people from the same party, or have you got mates in the Tory party or the Liberals?
Or is it like quite cliquey?
No, there is almost never a slot put in my diary for lunch. And therefore, there isn't such a thing as a lunch break. Therefore, you know, I'll be eating on the move or between meetings, etc. But the second part of your question is really interesting, which is, you know, is it all tribal?
Yeah.
For some people it is like that. Not for me, because I think I came into politics later in life. I'd done other jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I'd been a lawyer. I'd
so
done
you'd
the trial
sit next to Nadine and have
you. Well, I'm not sure about that. But there are Tories and other MPs
that I get on
perfectly well with.
Well, that lovely lady who spoke about Harriet Harman last week.
Yeah, she was really good.
Wow, wasn't she fabulous? Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, when in the middle of the really fierce Brexit debates, I was leading for our party on it, so in the middle of the debates, and my dad was dying, and it was awful. And so I'd have to sort of be in the middle of this debate and then leave that at the end of the debate and then get a train down to the hospital it was in. And it was the first time I had that very intense public person, private grief going on. And two or three of the Tory MPs reached out to me, particularly when he died. and that sort of thing, you can't ever say there's such tribal politics that we can't get on and do things together or talk or have coffee or eat if we had time. So, you know, I'm not a great believer in that, you know, divisive politics.
Well, we were thinking, Jesse's been thinking about how divided our country is at the minute.
Well, it's more about the culture wars and just kind of how it feels so polarising, and particularly for my generation, it just feels like, everyone's got an opinion, and I feel like the right really use marginalised groups such as immigrants or queer people, trans people, to really use them as pawns to kind of...
And how do you feel? Do you feel exhausted by it?
I feel responsible, particularly for, I have a huge queer following, and I feel incredibly responsible when I'm speaking to you, the leader of opposition, to kind of, how do I phrase one question to you when this is about food and family, and there's so many questions that so many people have.
You're the first person when we've mentioned you were coming on, and everybody had a question for you.
Oh, that's great.
Every single person.
That's really good.
I mean,
good.
Not but all that friendly, Keir.
Yeah. That's absolutely...
You can imagine,
understood.
Yeah.
No, you know, that's completely understood. And, you know, and so it should be. You know, there's always going to be that combination of people who support what you're doing, want to challenge what you're doing.
How do you do, like, how do you unite everybody when it feels so polarising? And how do you talk about respect and dignity being so important for you. And, like, how do you please everybody? You can't please everybody, right?
No, you can't please everybody, but you can... What Joe Cox, who was a fantastic friend and MP, came into Parliament the same day as me, and, you know, just a tragic story. But obviously she did her maiden speech when she said we've got more in common than that which divides us. Mm. That is so powerful and so meaningful. And I think that amongst the reasons the Conservatives have gone into this toxic space of divide... culture wars, is because they haven't got a record that they can stand on. They haven't got any leadership that they can really believe in. And therefore, they've gone to this divisive place. And that relies on a politics that says, let's find the points of difference. So if you and I are going to have a conversation, let's find where we don't agree, rather than trying to find what we do agree on.
Mm-hmm. So it becomes an echo chamber, and then
we have to break out of that, because it's exhausting, it puts people into camps they don't really want to be in, they entrench in those camps, and it means that there's a sort of collective lack of sort of belief in politics as a force for good, because everybody just goes further and further to one side or other in the debate and just shouts at each other or shouts past each other. So nobody's listening in this. It's very corrosive for the idea that I really believe in, which is that politics ought to be a force for good. So we have to find a way to get through that. And there are, I mean, this is going back to the thing about different MPs. After Joe Cox died, Theresa May joined the sort of campaign around loneliness, which was one of Joe's sort of themes, on a cross-party basis. So there is the ability to do that, and we desperately need to get back to that.
I mean, Keir, it's such a task that you have on your hands, and I just don't know where you start. Like, when if you get into power, where do you start? Like, what do you start with? Immigration. Does it not feel rather daunting? Daunting.
And why do you want to do it?
Because I want to change the country for the better. I absolutely passionately want to.
Do you think about the impact on your kids and... that they're going to be followed by horrible right-wing press trying to bring you down or trip you up, or...
Yeah, it's a journey, as all these things are. I didn't come into Parliament to be leader of the Labour Party or to become the Prime Minister. I came into Parliament in the hope that Ed Miliband would win the 2015 election, and I might just about become the Attorney General or something in his cabinet. So this wasn't something... And the election, getting Labour into government, is not about me. It's not about me going through the door of number 10. It's not about my shadow cabinet becoming the cabinet. It's not even about the Labour Party. It's about the country. It's about taking the country forward. So that's where I sort of come from on it. And that drives me forward. And I know there's tough things, and we'll have to do tough things and make difficult decisions. But I try not to get ahead of myself. But what you touched on there, one of the things that I'm most worried about is the impact on our children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been as protective as I hope we can be, so we never name them in public. Mm-hmm. We never have promotional photos done with them.
And you, will you continue to not do that when you're prime, if you're prime
minister? It's going to be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. I mean, obviously we're out and about with them, and so people know who they are and they see them. But by and large, that's been respected and protected so that they can get on with their lives. I do worry, though, because our boy was 15 the other week, so he will, I'm assuming the election is next year, you know, either May or October, that he will be 16. And our daughter is 12, going on 16 or 17 already. She will be 13. These are really important ages, and it will have an impact on their lives.
You,
and I'm more.
Have you spoken? I mean, who's had, if you make it to number 10, who's had similar age groups in there? Because Tony Blair's were
a bit younger.
A bit younger, and then Ed's were a little bit younger as well.
And Boris has got so many that we don't, I mean, he's got a few in every.
So I don't know. I can't remember now the age of David Cameron's children.
They were quite young. And then he sadly lost a child as well while he was in.
Yeah.
But like today, Jessie's been in the sports day with the mum's race. Are you participating in sports days and things like that?
Not anymore. But
why
that's
not? Because, football injury.
No, because how old are your children now?
6, 4, and 2.
So what happened to us, and I think this happens to every parent, is you lovingly walk the kids to school and pick them up. And I used to make a real habit, however busy I was, to try and make sure that several days a week I was there at the school gates. Because, you know, I do not want to be that man, and it is usually men, who say in years to come, I wish I'd spent more time with your kids. If you want to spend more time with your kids, spend more time with your kids. But there does come a point, and it's going to come, I'm afraid, probably the last year at primary school, where certainly our kids said, Can you just drop me at the corner, Dad?
Oh.
And because they're growing up, and the idea of me pitching up to now secondary school for them would be something that would, you know, that's just
they'd
a
have
no-go.
A heart attack if you were...
They do not want me there,
Jessica,
on sports day.
This is coming,
I'm afraid. It's coming.
No, Jesse.
I want to know, you've got teenagers. They must be politically minded, or are they completely kind of just don't want to know about it? Do you have debates with them around the dinner table? Is it a very different situation than what it was
when you
were growing up?
Say they wanted to join the Conservatives. Could you imagine that?
We do talk politics. We talk, you know, broadly. I try not to impose it on them, obviously.
What are they most interested about talking to you about?
Oh, work, the job, what goes on. I mean, genuine. So our boy came into Parliament last week.
Yeah.
And was fascinated, came into some of the debates, sat in the debates. He knew more of our front benches than I thought. I mean, he recognised them. So he would say, I'm not interested in politics. And he says in very strong terms, I'm not going into politics. Mm. He's decided, having watched me, that he's not going to become a lawyer, he's not going to become a politician. But it's quite interesting that deep down, he's beginning to sort of explore those ideas. Mm-hmm. Our girl, slightly less, she's only 12, so... she's just developing those ideas. And I wouldn't thrust it on them. I mean, we've only got two rules for our kids, which is happy and confident. So we wouldn't say they've got to go off to university, they've got to become this, that, or the other. We genuinely just want them to be happy and confident.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you want, right? It's, yeah, and kind, maybe, add kind.
And kind,
yeah. I think I've done all right with you then, darling.
Yeah, very good.
You're quite confident and you're happy.
Yeah. Doing great things.
I'm doing okay. Yeah. I'm now fantastic. Terrified about my children and being happy, confident.
No, but congratulations on everything you've achieved. I mean, it's incredible.
Thank you. The music stuff is
through the roof.
You know, trying. Let's talk about music, actually. I went clubbing at the weekend. I want to know last time you went clubbing.
Oh, gosh, I can't remember.
You're into me. I really enjoyed your Desert Island Discs.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's I'll tell you a very funny story about that. Because... obviously, what I tried to do was pick songs that meant something to me on the journey. So Jim Reeves was the first one because it reminded me of my mum. I went through classical music, you know, Northern Soul, I love, Orange Juice, Edwin Collins, that sort of thing. But I ended with Stormzy, with Bridge Over Troubled Water, which I think is a beautiful song. It was actually a Grenfell tribute song as well, and it's beautiful. And our kids are quite into Stormzy, particularly our boy. And so it was something No, I haven't, although I went to his record company and they played me his latest album, which is really good, really, really good. And he was sort of texting them at the time saying, what does he think of it? What does he think of it? So I haven't been, but I chose that as my final song. And that's fine. And then I was at a pub. This was about 6 months ago. And just with Vic and a couple of friends of ours. So just, you know, very social. And some guy comes up to me at the bar and says, "You're a fraud." And I said, "Well, you're a no wonder we don't vote for you. You're a fraud." I said, I'm with my wife. What are you talking about? He said, "Desert Island Discs." And I thought, of all the challenges I've had on our politics of policy, this guy's actually challenging me. He said, "You don't listen to Stormzy. You're not being honest." And I said, "Did you listen to it?" Because I wasn't saying I listened to Stormzy. I was using records which told a story or reminded me of bits in my life. But it was so interesting to be challenged on.
Is that then when you made the call to the label to be like, "Can I go in and listen to Stormzy's new record, please?"
No, but
was it the press team being like, "Quick, you must go and listen"?
That's so interesting.
Are people often rude to you? Do they come up when you're out and say, "Oh"?
By and large, people are really positive.
Good.
And that is great. But, you know, it can go either way, but by and large. And I'm still in the relatively lucky position. I can walk down the high street, without too much aggravation.
How do taxi drivers treat you if you get in a black cab? Because they've always got something to say.
They're not big fans of Sadiq, I have to say.
No, well, I now have to have
a
police team with me every time I'm out, so that...
Thank God for that, then.
So I haven't been. But please report back.
Yeah. No, but you know what black cab drivers are like.
Should we eat?
Yeah.
Oh, God. You must just be exhausted.
It's busy.
Do you think it will be even more full on if you get into number 10?
Yes. It's really hard. And, you know, again, that's just the way it is. But that's then it's a question of trying to ensure that we find time. So I'm really, really clear. I will not do, unless it's absolutely urgent or a special reason, I won't do a Friday night event. So at 6 o'clock, we'll go home and we will be as a family home on a Friday night together. Vic's dad comes over sometimes. He's 94 and so he comes to us at the weekend quite a lot.
People that don't know, your wife is Jewish.
Yes, she is.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So
her family are from Poland originally.
And so Friday nights is Shabbat.
Yeah, so we do, particularly when our dad's there, we do prayers, etc. But we're all in and we want, and I want that to last for as long as it can because the kids are in and that sort of thing.
I got bat mitzvahed at the end of last year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and when I remember, we do Friday nights. And there's something incredibly meditative about that feeling of being able to kind of say goodbye to the week. And actually pause for a moment and look each other in the eye and have a conversation over the dinner table and say the brochas. And I don't know, there's something I find incredibly reassuring about it when I'm not working on a Friday night
And I think that's probably right. And for me knowing, and for the kids knowing, Vic knowing, that we, barring exceptional weeks, we will all be there on a Friday night together, it's a sort of rock in the week, if you like. Now, a lot of it is spent arguing about if we're going to get a takeaway, what we're going to get, or all the rest of it. But it is really nice and special.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, look at this.
Mum.
So that's purple prawns.
Okay.
Right.
Mum. You tell
that's
Kira.
That's a tomato tart.
Lovely.
That's purple prawns, like just garlicky prawns. It's like guacamole, but no avocados.
Yes. Yeah. You don't like avocados.
No, no.
What's that about?
Just the taste and the texture. So it's guacamole and avocados. and bananas.
Okay, well, we're all right.
Or even smell bananas. There's something about bananas. This is from when I was, you know, when I was very, very young.
Well, this is aubergine.
No, that's absolutely lovely.
So that's tomato. That's pea lentils, and that's courgette salad.
Fantastic.
It's enough for about 100 people.
And I love salad. Salad is fantastic. Good. So this is really good.
Let's hope this works.
So what did you have for lunch today?
He doesn't stop
today
for
lunch. Look,
somebody fed him.
Today I had a tuna sandwich. I've had lorry loads of tuna sandwiches since I've been in this job. It's just, you know, this was on during the middle of a meeting. Tuna sandwich.
Homemade or?
No, just brought in from prep today, but wherever.
Gotta love, what, the baguette or the sandwich?
Baguette, yeah. But it's, you know, the routine for the week is sort of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Parliament or headquarters in London, then out on the road for the rest of the time. So lunch is just, I can't remember the last time I stopped and had lunch. As a meal, as it were, rather than just a sandwich on the road or sandwich whilst we're working. This is really fantastic.
Do you like it?
Yeah, really good. The tomato, it's really good.
Delish. Really nice. It's really good. I like it.
Jesse usually says.
A chef called Alison Roman, who's amazing, came on, and this is from her new recipe book. Is it from her new one?
Yeah.
I love cooking. I just
do
find
you?
It,
so what
I find
what
it
you...
so relaxing. I know this sounds really weird, and I'm not going to pretend I do it every night, because I don't. And Vic does most of the cooking during the week for the kids. Quite often I'm not home in time for them anyway. But on a Saturday, I love it. So I've got a sort of routine of... there's Craig Charles to, you know, Radio 6.
Six
Funk
music.
And Soul. But it's 6 o'clock-ish.
So good.
Start. I love it. And it's just this... that's the point at which I'll sort of go into
so
the kitchen.
So you're not listening to Dad Ringers?
No. Craig Charles.
So six music six is your choice?
Yep. And then I've got it on. 6 o'clock and I'll start chopping away and preparing and just pottling around the kitchen. I love it.
What was your last meal that you cooked that you can remember?
Well, so I cook nearly every week. So the latest one that I love tandoori salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had fantastic. We were up in Glasgow.
Where'd you eat?
The team.
In
Mr. Sings in Glasgow.
Oh, I don't know it.
That's a really fantastic curry restaurant.
Okay.
The best tandoori salmon I've ever had.
Okay.
Really, really brilliant.
Amazing.
So I thought, right, I've got to cook this. So then I've sort of had several goes at it. And so that's probably the last thing. But I had, because Vic and the kids don't eat fish.
Oh, gosh.
So we got these corn pieces, which I also... did you know, tandoori,
like paneered, is it almost
it's almost like, you know, it's chicken, it's intended to be sort of imitation chicken. So,
and is it nice?
Yes, it's good. Yeah, so and there are other dishes that I love doing on a Saturday. I mean, the problem I run into is I want it to be as different and as elaborate and as experimental as possible, because that's part of the enjoyment, is seeing what it's like, different ingredients, etc. But then for the kids, it's like, we want pasta and tomato sauce. We don't want to try anything else. So I get into this battle. So I have to do sort of pasta bakes that are as elaborate as I can get away with until it gets to the point where they won't enjoy it or eat it.
Okay, well, this leads us into Last Supper.
This is the Last Supper, so
you don't have to be dying.
Death row thing, because it makes me feel horrible. So you're going on a desert island for about 6 months. So
no, I'd say let's go
a year. Yeah.
So, one of the things I did when I was a lawyer was work with the Death Penalty Project, which is a project based here in London to minimise and get rid of the death penalty across the world, particularly in the English speaking former colonies. So I did extensive cases in the Caribbean, probably went to the Caribbean about 50 times to represent people and to fight for people not to be hung. So I've got as close as I think, or closer than I wanted to be, to that feeling.
Wow.
Of,
is there still the death penalty there now?
Yeah, there is. I mean, because of the work of the Death Penalty Project, it's been much reduced. But it's...
And they're, you know, hung there.
It's death by hanging, yeah.
Oh,
so, I mean, and that's very, you know, when you're in the prisons in, you know, Jamaica, Trinidad, they're not nice places, as you can imagine. sitting in a dark cell with someone who is destined to be hanged. It's really, it's an incredible moment. And obviously we're fighting to save, normally, his life. There were some women that we represented in Uganda. But knowing that in this legal case, if you get it right, this person will live. And if you don't and you don't succeed, then they will in all likelihood be hung.
How many did you save?
Oh, I mean, I'd say we, because we worked as a team the whole time. Hundreds. When we went to Uganda, there were over 400 people in one test case that we did at the same time. And we met them there in Kampala, which is obviously the centre of Uganda. The prison is up high up on a hill. And you go in the prison, it's high security. All of the prisoners are in white shorts and a white vest. And we sat there with all 400 of them, talking through the case we're going to be running on their behalf. It's like a film set.
Oh my
and
God.
Some of them had been there 20 years. Some of them were under 18 when they'd been convicted. And in the end, in that case, we won on behalf of all 400 of them, which didn't mean they were released from prison, but it meant they weren't going to get hung. Mm. And they could have the appropriate sentence for whatever they'd done. It was an incredible thing to do. So, you know, it was really, you know, that was as close to the Last Supper as I wanted to get.
Did you ever see them eating their Last Supper? Did you ever stay with them for that part, or was it?
No, we were never there. And most of the time, I'm really happy to say, the people we represented, we managed to get off death row. And so we didn't very often go through that horror of someone you're representing.
Okay, so you're not going on
death row. Okay, we're not death row.
So this is a Last Supper. I'm going to go, I don't know, I'm going to go to a nice island or something.
You're going to go to a nice island, but limited food.
Are we limited food?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
So you've got to choose a starter, a main, a pudding and a drink of choice.
Starter, I'm going to go for a salad.
Really?
Jesus,
come on. You're going to lose a few votes with that.
I love salad. I love salad. And I'm going to go for a seaweed salad with chilli.
Oh, now, my goodness, I've never heard of this.
This is fantastic. Curveball. So this goes, this isn't intended to link, but now it does. When we were doing all this case in the Caribbean, we used to have to go via, for the top end of the Caribbean, you go in via Miami and then fly across. And so we would be several hours in Miami. And there were two dishes in Miami that there was blackened fish, which was fantastic. And seaweed salad with chili, a big bowl of it.
So is it like Samphire?
Yeah, it's a bit sort of thinner and crispier.
No, I know, but like it's a different kind. It's not a salt.
It is fantastic.
Is it salty as well?
Salty with chili in. It is really.
Have you ever tried to make it?
No.
Okay.
I will try one day. I've not even ever really found it anywhere else. I've never. It must be
on. It's worth going to Miami for that.
But it was really incredible.
Okay, I like that. You kind of won me back. Okay, fine.
Although I nearly lost you with starting with salad. Hopefully that's... And then I'm going to go for my tandoori salmon, because I love it.
From Mr. Singh's.
I probably have to go take away from Mr. Singh's. Yeah.
Fine, no problem.
I don't know where this
can last
Can
you make it? Have you just put a tandoori paste?
Yeah, so that's...
He's been trying to perfect it.
That's the one I've done most recently, which is... And I've done it now three or four times to try and get it right. With all the... You know, get all the ingredients, make the paste, marinate
don't do
it.
That.
So
really?
You're a perfectionist.
But I also... I tend to follow the recipe rather than just sort of doing it without.
Okay,
so
I'll give you Alison Roman's book.
Okay, yeah. But it's so that's, I mean, that's the sort of most recent thing that I've learned to make. I'm also trying to perfect the sort of the perfect arrabbiata from scratch, which, again, just getting the right blend. And that the kids will eat.
So they like spicy?
Yes.
Okay.
I like spicy, yeah.
Okay, so...
So my tandoori salmon is... Well, any made by sides? Mr. Singh. I'm not going to make this meal.
Any sides?
Probably some. We always get sort of dals and that sort of thing.
Which naan do you go for?
Plain naan. Plain naan.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Which one do you go for?
Peshawari.
The reason is because the kids wouldn't really eat anything other than a plain naan. So there's a bit of accommodation there.
Okay.
And pilau rice, which they would prefer white rice, so we have a little battle about that.
Okay.
So I'm going to have this tandoori salmon.
And then pud?
I think lemon cheesecake.
Oh, do you like a cheesecake? A baked cheesecake or a non-baked cheesecake?
Baked.
Baked. So like Jewish quite cheesecake.
Light, yeah, very light.
Yeah, a proper New York cheesecake.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too.
So that's where I'd go, I think.
And what are you drinking?
I drink Pinot Grigio because this is Vic's wine of choice.
Oh, really? My wife,
yeah. So
you're very accommodating.
She's very easy to
Is she
please.
Allowed to have this meal with me, by the way?
Yeah.
We better not have the tandoori salmon then. I might have to think about something else for the middle course.
But your team, before you came, said that you drink beer and wine. And I realised that I have no clue about beer. So do you drink an IPA or a lager? Oh, which one?
IPA. Usually things like Doombar, but our local pub is called Pineapple. Fantastic local pub.
The Pineapple, that's like a rowdy one.
No, it's not rowdy.
The Pineapple. Like the one that is in Camden.
Kentish Town.
Yeah, it's like a fun, not rowdy, but like I've been to parties there.
I bet you've been on a night when there's something going on at the O2. Because it's a sort of stop-off point on the way.
No, I've been like, the Pineapple's like a fun one.
It is. I'm not saying it's not fun, but it's more a sort of local.
Like when I was in Man Like Me, that they were a Camden-based band, they'd always have like afters at the Pineapple. Yeah. Mm. Interesting. Okay, so what do you drink there?
They've got an IPA called Pineapple, which is really good. Oh. Which is.
And who makes it? Which brewery?
I don't know, actually.
Okay. I know nothing about beer.
So the only time I deviate from drinking beer from IPA is if I play football and it's a hot day, you kind of got to have a cold lager. Because it's just, okay. I don't know, it's just one of those things that just goes with it. But wine is, white wine. I drink red as well, but Vic doesn't drink red.
How easy is it to switch off from trying to become the leader of this country?
Really hard. And sometimes, if I've got something going on, I find it almost impossible. And then that's really hard for Vic and the kids, because it's obviously I'm distracted and I'm only half listening, I'm not engaged. And it's a really bad thing, but it is very difficult. But so if I'm doing media in the morning, for example, I did Laura Kunzberg this week.
Was that fun for you? Is it ever fun?
Well, the interview was 25 minutes or something, but the amount of time
that goes into,
and then so that means that the Saturday evening before is just completely distracted because I'm thinking about it, and then that is really frustrating for Vic and the kids because it's obvious that I'm sort of half detached from it, and even if I'm in the same room as them, I'm, you know, and then the kids joke and say to each other, he can't do two things at once when they're trying to have a conversation with everyone. I'm trying to sort of look at something for the morning.
We wondered how you manage, because we've got a majority quite right-wing press in this country. I mean, there's only two papers that I think that are supportive of the Labour Party. How do you manage that?
Well, the first thing is I read all the papers every day.
Yeah.
We get them delivered. So I go through...
How long does that take?
Well, I say read. I look at each one to see what's the lead story, what's the editorial, what are the sort of interesting bits and pieces of today, what are they saying about us, what are they saying about me.
Do your kids get fed up when they're mean about you or someone's being
rude to you? Do you think they're quite protected to not know about that?
They're a mixture, a really good mixture of being protected, but also, you know, bringing me back down to earth the whole time.
Good.
And I'll give you two examples of that. So last year I won the Spectator Politician of the Year Award. So that's, you know, Spectator. You know. And they gave me a framed certificate, which I then took home about 10 o'clock at night. And our boy is sitting on the settee with his feet up watching telly. And I came in and I gave it to him and said, what do you think of this? And he looked at it. And then without really taking his eyes off the telly or his feet off the settee, he passed it back to me and said, how'd you blag that then?
Oh, my goodness.
It was just fantastic. And the other one was our daughter. This was a few years ago now. When she said, what time are you going to be home? And I said, oh, I'm going to be late tonight, I'm afraid. Why? What are you doing? I'm doing a fundraising dinner. She said, oh, what's that? I said, well, it's a dinner where people pay money to hear somebody speak. And she said, who's speaking? And I said, me. And she said, why would anyone pay to hear you speak? And it was like a slow motion sort of car crash. You could almost sense where she was going. And now she'd do it to be cheeky. But then that was just this incredulity. It's a really fantastic leveller. So the moment I walk through the door, I've got to be dad. I've got to be dad. And I love that. That's great. And that's as it should be.
How do they ever go,
Dad, so-and-so says you're being a dick on this. Or, like, so-and-so says that you really are being mean about this. Like, you know, have they ever brought home politics? Because in the playground, people talk, parents talk, like...
No, they don't. I mean, now... and this is nice. Lots of people come up and want a selfie and that sort of thing. And they get really fed up about that, particularly our boy. Because if I walk down the high street with him, he wants me to be with him. Mm. Not constantly, you know, being stopped and having to talk to other people. And that's... Trying to find that space with them is quite hard sometimes. And there's no end of people who say, I can see you're with your family, so I won't interfere, and then sit down and have a sort of 20-minute conversation.
You're public property, aren't you,
really? Yeah. But that does... They get a bit fed up with that.
Do you go to parties at Downing Street? Have you been invited?
I've never been invited to one of the Downing Street parties, no.
Are you kidding?
Thankfully, particularly the ones during COVID. Otherwise, I might not be sitting here. No. I think all prime ministers make a habit of keeping leaders of the opposition well away from Downing Street. Yeah.
It's a bit mean.
Yeah. I mean, I've obviously been there, but not...
Have you been inside?
Yeah, yeah.
And what's it like?
It's a working... I mean, it's a fantastic building, iconic.
What do you think of the recent decor?
I haven't seen that decor.
Right. You haven't been close yet.
Rishi might have changed it.
Oh, Rishi probably has. Maybe he likes
their
style.
Yeah, I thought there was some story about it had been changed, but I don't know.
What a waste.
But anyway, I haven't been there.
I would like to know where... You've talked about the pineapple. Mm. You've talked about Mr. Singh's. Are there any go-to spots that Sir Keir Starmer... couldn't live without? Any, like, local restaurants that you absolutely adore?
Yeah, there's an Italian called Rosella up the road,
which
is run by a friend of ours, and it's fantastic. And if we're not eating at home, we'll sometimes go there on a Friday. And again, that's where Vic and her dad can get together, and where her sister will come with her daughter. So that's just a really locally based, straightforward Italian restaurant. That is probably our go-to if we're going to go out. There's also a really good curry house up in Highgate.
Where Kipling's. Do you get your fish and chips? Oh.
The nearest place now is just in Highgate. But fish and chips, if I'm getting fish and chips, I wouldn't normally get it as a takeaway because Vic's not going to eat it. Our daughter's not going to eat it. So that would be more when I'm on the road with the team.
Oh, yeah.
If we're staying over in a hotel or something like that. But it's good fish and chips, hard to beat.
Would you like a bit,
Keir? I will do, yeah, please. That looks fantastic.
I hope so.
Really fantastic. Just a small bit for me, please.
Okay, like that?
Yeah, I mean, I almost never eat desserts. It's just...
Why?
I don't know. I'm not particularly sweet-toothed, so I just don't.
It's pavlova, made with nectarines.
I'll have that
peaches.
One and then you have a more beautiful
no,
one.
No, I don't mind. That's I'm fine. So I very rarely make dessert. I mean, because it's not really my thing. At some stage, I do want to try and get into baking. Everybody says baking is a really good thing to get into.
I guess if you like cooking and it's kind of, you can switch off when you're doing it.
Yeah.
I just find baking quite tedious. I'm really bad at it.
Right.
But why not? And you're a perfectionist, so you could master, you know... Like, yeah, I feel like it requires a.
I'll give it a go at some stage.
To detail.
It's better that one than
this. Oh, thing. I honestly don't mind.
I do.
Before we let you go, is there one smell or scent that can take you back somewhere, happy or sad, or taste?
I think the smell of cut grass takes me back to beginning to play grass football. And, you know, going onto a pitch that's been cut. So when I was probably... First time I went on a decent pitch was probably when I was about 10, playing in an under-11s league, where they cut the grass. And it's that smell of fresh grass that's just been cut. You do still get it at football grounds. Not so much, because now the grass is sort of integrated a bit with other stuff. You don't get the same cut smell. But that takes me back to sort of cycling around Surrey and Kent. I played for the Kent Boys League for... a team there, and just walking on the pitch. I can't tell you how joyful walking onto a pitch is for me. It's just stepping onto the grass with a football.
You could be the Arsenal mascot.
Well, I'm not sure about that. We want to wish them luck.
are the conversations, you know, you have that person talking to you in the pub about your Stormzy selection. In the stands, Are people asking you very different? Do you feel like in different spaces you are asked repeatedly a similar question?
No, there's different things people ask.
Yeah. And can you enjoy the game, or you just get hounded with questions?
No, I can enjoy the game because round us, the people we're with there, I've known for so two or three rows in front. One of the guys in front that we've got to know through sitting there, his wife sends pakoras on the last game in a top. You know, so there's just thing. So that is a bit like the people I play football with. They wouldn't bombard me with things about work. Because they know I've been in those seats for I don't know how many years now. So they knew me before I was even a politician. And so they wouldn't do that. But you do, I mean, you do get it at football. You know, people come up to you, people have ideas, people have challenges, people tell you what they're passionate about. So you do, and people do notice what you've been doing. So occasionally they'll say, I saw you did this that week or that. You know, so it does cut through, but... I mean, in the crowd, in the stand at football, it's all about the football. It's just you get, well, you know what this is like. You just get totally drawn in.
Love it.
You're all there sort of enduring and enjoying. You know,
shout depends. Obscenities out.
Not anymore. About the ref. Not anymore.
Since you've been in.
Not anymore because somebody will take a picture of that and record me. But there's, that. I mean, the moment if you're in the crowd, a goal is scored.
So
and there's just this, all these people, you know, tens of thousands of people have been doing something else all week, live in different places, don't all know each other. And at that moment, they come together and everybody gets up. It's like this,
it's
the choreography that is natural in that is absolutely incredible. And it's an amazing moment
okay,
in football.
Okay, when's the general election going to be?
I don't know.
Do you think it'll be November?
Next year?
This year.
I don't know. I mean, from my point of view, the sooner the better. And I say that because people are really suffering now. They can't pay their bills. Their mortgage is going through the roof. Every day this government's here, it just gets worse. So, you know, for the country's sake, we need it soon. My hunch is that it'll go at least into the early part of next year. Could go all the way through to the end of next year. Yeah. You know, it's up to the government when they go. They'll go at whatever point they think is best for them. And there's nothing we can do about that. That's just one of the prices of, if you lose an election, you lose the right to say when the next election is. So, but we'll be ready whenever it is.
Sir Keir Starmer, thank you for joining us on Table Manners. It's been lovely to get to know you a little bit better.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the food. It was delicious, but company's been great.
Thank you, and best of luck with all those tuna sandwiches that you're about to endure.
Well, I thought he was absolutely charming, but such a strong sense of public service.
And responsibility.
I mean, I felt when he's talking about the Stormzy song, he should be heavy as the head that wears the crown. I'm telling you.
He hasn't got the crown yet,
Mum. But he might have.
Do you feel like you learnt anything new about Sir Keir Starmer?
I do. He didn't come from a political background.
It was fascinating listening to him talking about his family.
Yeah. And his admiration for his mother and father. Yeah. And they weren't a wealthy family. They were striving to make the best of their lives.
Thank you, Sir Keir Starmer, for coming over and doing the podcast. Thank you so much to everyone that has listened to this series of Table Manners. We will be back after, well, a little hiatus. Lenny's going on holiday for a month. And then I'm going to be joining her for some of it. Whilst we may not be having any new guests around over the summer, we've decided to do, because, you know...
To remind people of some of the fabulous people we've had.
Yeah, so whilst you may not hear some new episodes, some of you may have joined us 3 years in, and we have plenty of wonderful material that came before. So we will be offering up on the table some wonderful episodes from previous years. But yeah, we'll see you soon. Lenny will have a fabulous tan. She'll have some new Greek recipes. She'll be talking about how beautiful Skopelos is. I shall be talking about touring again, and we'll be getting some brilliant, brilliant guests. Thank you so much for listening to us. We absolutely love doing it. We love hearing from you. Please email us at hello@tablemannerspodcast.com. And take care of yourselves, and we'll speak to you soon.
Have a good summer.
Have a lovely summer.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.